It is Friday, the 30th of October, and this is episode 263 of Digital Outbox. That's 2015, by the way. I forgot that bit. If you didn't know, running out 2015 rapidly, nearly in November. Nearly Halloween. Last time I went, that was considered bad. So I won't do that. Hello, Ian.
Hi, Chris. I always kind of wondered, like, if one of us didn't show, could we do it on our own? And I think you've just proven that you could quite easily entertain yourself and hold a conversation.
As long as I was really tired, I could actually just talk to myself.
And the best bit is, I think you could probably have two views on things as well, just to kind of keep the balance.
I try and keep my split personality hidden away.
Yeah, Halo rocks. It sucks. It rocks.
I hate
it
this.
Sucks.
I love it. I hate it. That's purely based on whether I've won or well lost, though. So that's fair enough.
Yeah, I had a little mood chart last night when we were playing, and I was tempted to just say, what mood are you just now? Oh, five. Oh, just one.
I've just snorted a little bit. Right. Come on, let's get on with the news so we can play a bit more Halo later. TalkTalk. They got attacked last, we mentioned it last week, maybe the week before, something like that. Anyway, someone's been arrested. Turns out it's a boy, age 15, from Northern Ireland. In fact, the two people have been arrested. But the first person was a boy 15 from Northern Ireland. And you know, it's a bit disappointing that it clearly was a script kiddie. And he eventually, when he comes out of jail, will probably go on to do cyber security and probably earn quite a lot of money. So he's probably all right. But anyway, yes. I'm not sure what to say about that. It is a bit disappointing. We pretty much knew that TalkTalk weren't the most secure place because they'd been hacked, I think, three times prior to this. And this one was a big one, but they've been arguing this week that it's not as big as we thought.
No, so a 15-year-old boy, a 16-year-old boy in London's also been arrested.
And there was a house in Liverpool.
A house in Liverpool was searched. Yeah, mind your wallets. And I know, casual racism strikes again. it just brings back so many FIFA memories.
Calm down.
The bit for me is that there's two things. Firstly, whoever's running the company should just be bagged for this, because it's not so much the age or the script kiddies, because they could be the most intelligent little hackers in the world.
Yeah, but
seemingly the exploit they were taking advantage of was like a 5-year-old known exploit. So pretty poor to have such a big, massive, you know, customer-facing company with so much information, and it looks like there's been a fairly easy way in. The kind of second bit is, There's a couple others this week. M&S had to shut their site down because seemingly people were logging in and seeing other people's details that they could then edit, which wasn't fantastic. You know, so I was logging in as me and I'm seeing, oh, it's Chris Hutchison.
Who knows how many people logged in to try and see what they could get away with.
So they shut down the site and then opened it up a few hours later and says, oh, no harm done. And then British Gas have had to respond to a list of 2,000 people's details being leaked and saying it's not as it leaked it. And it's like, okay. So it's just... And my question, would you choose a company based on how secure you think they are? Because you said they're like TalkTalk, known for not being the best. So even if they had the fastest broadband and they were the cheapest on there, would you go?
Well, it's a tough decision, isn't it? Because I'm not making that decision now, for one. And normally when you make a decision about buying things, you just don't know. So given that, to be honest, TalkTalk was always one of those companies which I didn't want to go with. I avoided... Their sales tactic alone was, sell it high, pile them high, sell them cheap. But they didn't get a good reputation for customer service. They had a few underhand sort of methods to their sales technique. Yes. So yeah, I don't think maybe this just all adds up together. You know, it wasn't really a well structured safe place. And to be honest, the broadband provider that I'm with is considered to be one of the I'd say one of the most business focused. So I'm with Zend. Zen, and it's they're constantly expensive, but they also seem to be do things the right way rather than the wrong way. But I could be proved wrong, couldn't I? But maybe it does come into my decision. Yeah,
Yeah, and you mentioned about the data. So they're saying that the data wasn't as bad as, like, I think they were saying it was 4 million people's details.
Yeah, initially we reported that they were saying it, four million odd,
but
something.
But what they were saying now is a 21,000 unique bank account numbers, 28,000 obscured credit and debit card, 15,000 customer dates of birth, and 1.2 million customer emails, names and phone numbers.
So it's still, it's still damn poor anyway. But yes, it's not 4 million, but still, they can't see that as a win.
No, and the thing is as well, they're saying not all the data access was encrypted, but they did say that credit and debit card details were tokenized.
Mm. So they say as a customer, you should visit talktalk.co.uk/secure, which is quite ironic. Yeah. Let's see what happens and comes out of it, and how sophisticated it all was before we say anything. But there's talk that this should now lead to extra regulatory powers to offer incur fines, for example. At the moment, I think they're limited to 500,000 for data fines. Whereas in America, that's a far, far looser thing. So as an example, AT&T got fined 17 million over data breaches that it had in certain locations. Everyone's talking now about how can we force companies to protect data better? How do we incentivize them? Well, we do it by making it such a massive risk for them if they don't protect this data properly.
And in some ways you could think, well, it's a really poor way of doing it, but I mean, if you take safety at work, that became serious when CEOs could go to jail, rather than getting fined. It was like, oh, I could now, go to jail because I've not looked after an employee. And a lot of companies took it very seriously after that.
Well, a 500 million fine what it says is it's better to spend that money on increasing your performance than on not having, the extra hardware you need, all those kind of, the processes and systems. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't monetize all the loss that someone who's had all their details stolen happens to them, and all the way further down the line. And I think, so the idea will be to try and, increase the fine to sort of represent some of the damage that's being caused that isn't currently catered for. Wonderful. Google is going to merge Chrome OS and Android in a move that was predicted when Chrome OS and Android were first announced. Because they were announced around similar times, weren't they? They weren't that too dissimilar.
Android was bought by Google. And I think it was bought either just before or just after iOS came out. There's all that whole kind of story now about who copied who and who did what. And if you look at Android's first version and iOS's first version, and you see how it all iterated. I think Chrome came a little bit after, but a lot of people were surprised, saying, why have you got two mobile operating systems? Why? Because I can remember they were saying, well, Android's tablet and phone, and Chrome is like their netbook type operating system.
Which is what they've done with it.
It's what they've done. But there was always, I remember right at the start, there was always talk of, in the future we could merge them. Who knows? It's a punt, and we'll see where it goes. And it now seems to be that it was, was it Wall Street Journal? It was Wall Street Journal, kind of broke this last night, saying that they're going to merge it next year. They've already done it, back at Google headquarters, and in 2017 you will see it merge. And Google have come out and said, no, Chrome's still a fantastic platform, it's great in school, because where Chrome's done really well is schools.
Because it's a really locked down thing, you have to be inside browsers, and as long as you can limit access, you're limiting access to the whole operating system. It's not like you just have to do it per app.
It's become a really viable platform compared to, Apple were doing really well with iPads at schools, but it is slightly more expensive. And Chrome, it's just got a massive ecosystem behind it, and they've done quite well with educators and putting the tools in place to support
that. And you get a keyboard at the end of the day on their Chromebooks. Yeah.
And one of the challenges now is even, so Google have come out and denied it, because even sowing that seed of doubt, if you're a school and you're saying, well, I'm going to invest the next three or four years in this, would you?
I guess we should really wait for Google to confirm it. Or have they now kind of been a bit further down the line towards confirming?
I think they're just saying we're still fully supporting Chrome, we're still fully behind it. But I think what others have now said is that next year you're going to see it basically, they will do a release, and it's like pick the platform you want. It could be, it'll be both on a device and you can pick whichever one. It's almost sounding like Android's going to come to laptops or netbooks more.
Yeah, I mean, obviously now that they've kind of they've got their ideas now together on tablets, it's kind of the next logical progression that you just scale it up slightly further and get it onto desktop. But people expect different things from a desktop, so yeah. And there's no saying that Chrome OS can't run within Android, because at the end of the day, it is just a browser plus extensions.
Exactly. And I mean, Pixel.
You could always make make an Android thing look more like Android run as a Google Chrome, whereas the other way around, not quite as straightforward.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the Pixel, they launched that Pixel C last month, which I guess was a sign of maybe, you know, here's an Android running laptop. I keep on saying tablet. So yeah, it's interesting, because there's lots of talk about that platform merging, and then, you know, I still look at where, and we'll see. I think it's a couple of weeks time. The iPad Pro is coming out, so it looks like the pre-orders are November 11th. And you do wonder, a really powerful iOS device, you know, does it really blur the lines between that and Mac? You know, and you start to think,
we'll see. I don't think so yet, but yeah.
Okay. No, but you. There's more and more overlapping, you know. There's most of the Mac releases now are talking about bringing iOS to the Mac, you know, and it's just the little features that you get.
You know, when Logic went from being its main, you know, they I don't think they dumbed it down, but they just put a new interface on it and people hated it. Just, and I think that's what would happen if you have a real computer trying to run an operator, you know, what is effectively a mobile operating system.
The difficulty is you're still going to get. You know, if I grab loads of photos or videos, it's still far easier to develop and process on a Mac. Still, well, look at us, you know, we're not doing this in iOS. All the iOS options for recording a podcast are all really quite hacky, you know, and just suboptimum, really.
BT is going to spend $12.5 billion buying EE to make BT.
You would love that to be its new name, just so you could do that. So this was, I don't know, was it about, it was February they did the deal, but this is them getting now
regulatory approval, yes.
Yeah.
They were, because we weren't sure that they were going to get it, because it turns them into this absolute behemoth. They're just massive.
Yeah.
Across all of media. And they, you know, they've done this in quite a short space of time, which is pretty amazing, really. So they, you know, they've suddenly become this massive TV enterprise. They've always been a massive, obviously, telecoms enterprise, but they've this adds their mobile to their offering. So effectively now they can do TV, mobile, broadband, and home phone. So they can literally do the whole gambit. And the watchdog said, we can't really see that this is going to affect choice or competition in the market, because BT don't do mobile at the moment. I mean, they used to, they don't anymore. So there's no, it's not like we're growing something or changing something. We're just moving the ownership to another place. What they can do, though, is start offering lost leads on phones, a bit like they've done with their TV packages and their mobile offerings. If all of their sort of things cross-fertilize and they do lost leads to get you sucked into their enterprise, and I think they'll do that in the mobile industry, you know, the mobile market as well. But if it means I get BT Sport without actually having to pay the stupid amount of money I have to pay for it now, well, I'm all for this.
Fantastic. Like you said, there's not a bigger overlap as say the O2 and 3 kind of buy merger, which just sees one of the big competitors disappearing, you know.
Yes,
and
so it just means immediately you've lost, you know, a whole branch of it. Although it's all false anyway, isn't it?
Well, it's a bit like folks, you know, I'm moving to GIFGAF. It's like we're moving to O2.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're moving to O2 with a different branding. It's, you know, it's like having supermarkets. I'm going with a supermarket, or I'm going with this, that, the other for their banking. Well, all right, you're just doing that bank then.
Yeah.
No, I'm doing Tesco.
Yeah.
Tesco don't have a bank.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's all false competition. But nevertheless, I agree with them that, you know, moving it from one organization to another doesn't seem to, but it's just a massive play by BT, you know, not just buying a mobile company, they're buying the biggest one we've got, and it's an awful lot of money.
They've bought the biggest one, and if you look at, I mean, they've done some really ballsy moves, you know, the whole BT Sport, you know getting Champions League football, getting the Premiership rights for some of the games, you know, MotoGP.
Well, they're the first ones that really made it stick, right? Because the other companies that have tried to take that football slice just never made it work, but somehow they've just about seemed to have made it stick.
All right, money, I think it is.
I guess it's just having that money, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they're prepared to make these losses in the short term for hopefully long term.
And they're growing. I mean, they came out with the results this week, and I think they're 170,000 or 107,000 subscribers up in the last quarter. Mm. So they are growing.
But the offering's working, as in it, you know.
Yeah,
it's working. More mobile phone Spectrums on sale coming up relatively soon, but they're basically this is to pave the way for 5G. Ofcom are not going to limit how much Spectrum someone can buy. With the intent that if someone really wants to go for it, they could offer super fast downloads on these new Spectrums by buying up big chunks of them.
Yes, it's kind of surprising that 4G for a lot of people still feels new.
Yeah,
and we're talking about 5G, which is the same as about another 6-7 years away. 2020 to 2022 is when 5G is expected.
The earliest in 4 years, but that's as I get older, these. That feels like a long way away, but actually, it'll be here and, just be here like that.
It's interesting as well, the auction, because you think back to the 4G auctions, remember they were saying, oh, we're going to get 6 billion and 8 billion because they based it on the 3G prices, and it was like, oh, okay.
Yes, the firms got so burnt on 3G that they'll never make that mistake again.
Yeah.
So 70 million they're going for, and much more reasonable, and it just all helps the consumers at the end of the day. Good, I guess.
Absolutely, they've got to. Our appetite for data only grows.
It will only grow. Yeah.
And that's the only thing I was thinking back to what we just talked about with Macs and tablets and Androids. I think it's that kind of data speed. At the kind of same price, we'll start to like, oh, I'll just store that in the cloud.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't think it
brings
about
all those things into play that just weren't there before. And even now they're kind of in play, but the faster we go, the more in play they are, the more, and it's little things like that. We kind of, Dropbox used to be a great service, but it used to be quite annoying and it took ages to upload something or whatever.
But I was amazed. I was talking to one of the kind of managers at work who's kind of walks away quite a bit. So broadband wise, he's never too fussed. But he was talking to me about fibre because his broadband's rubbish. He can't work from home very well. So I said, get in touch with him. I said, you'll probably find it's the same price, whatever you're paid now. So I was talking to him Monday and he was like, oh, I've done it. Look. And he had brought in his thing to show me, his BT and stuff. He says, I've saved £1. And he says, and I now get, instead of getting I think it was like 4 meg he was getting, he's now getting fibre broadband.
Yeah.
He's getting BT Sport. He's getting he's got a new telly box. Yeah. He's got something else and something else. But the bit that shocked me, I says, "You've got a cap." I went, "Yeah." I says, "I don't use." I says, "So I've got 20 gig a month." Okay. And I was like, "What?" And he looked at me, and went, "That's massive, Ian." And I was like, "I said, and in fact,
you have never had a fat pipe, mate."
I tell you what, I know which day it was now. It was Wednesday, wasn't Monday, because I said last night. I says, "I installed a game." He went, "Yeah." I says, "The one day patch was 9 gig." Flipping heck. I says, I'm probably going through 10, 15 gig a day and not realising it.
And downloading Sky catch-up shows and things like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
It's amazing how big they are.
You just do it.
And they're invisible.
Yep. My mom is just, she's great. It's like, I've missed it. I'll get in catch-up. And it's just, and like a year ago, it was just like, I do not know how this works.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. Roaming charges are going to be abolished. So they've finally had the green light from the European Union. Whoop-a-dee-whoop.
This is a start of our three European Union stories. And it's the good, the bad, and the...
Yeah. And they're all tied together. So yes, finally, you will be able to cross Europe and providers will not be able to charge you more than 3.5p extra per minute for calls. Sorry, 2 cents extra in the Europe cents. For SMS and 5p extra per megabyte of data. So basically, it's all very reasonable. Should make it 75% cheaper. But there are caveats that we are going to uncover in this next story we're going to cover, which is about net neutrality, which actually got bundled up with this roaming data. So basically, the net neutrality. So we've talked about this lots on our podcast about how important it is that there is no division of speed actually built into the internet. So, one video provider should not be treated with any more priority than another video provider. however, this net neutrality sort of argument's been going backwards and forwards in Europe for many years now. And it seems that someone attached this roaming data amendment, and they managed via fatigue to push through these net neutrality rules, which actually in favor of having a two-speed internet, basically, to, as they say, try and foster innovation where really in the long run it's going to cripple it, unfortunately. So basically they've snuck through this data roaming charge to get this net neutrality laws passed, and the data roaming charges also come with massive loopholes, including it's all subject to fair usage, and there's no definition of what fair usage actually is. So they could say two texts when you're in Europe is fair usage, and then we can charge what the hell we like beyond that. So
fantastically disappointing. And we talked about this. I'm sure we talked about this 2-3 years ago, and talked about how MPs, they can't understand everything, so they're getting put all this kind of, facts put in front of them, and some of them are there, legitimately trying to understand what is the best, and there's other ones that have been bought off clearly, and as you say, fatigue and getting it rolled into it, because it was the deputy digital minister or something, the vice commissioner responsible for the EU digital market put pressure, and that was the kind of fatigue point. If you don't pass this in its entirety, everything, you can't split it up, don't pass everything, it's going to take months, if not years. And they got all that eye-catching stuff about, we're going to save on all these, roaming charges. And then this comes in.
At the end of the day, out of 751 MP, European MPs, a vote happens and there's only 50 that actually turn up to this final debate. And you can kind of see that. But, still 663 placed their vote. They must, they just either followed party lines or whatever, but most of them probably just placed it with, they see this nice easy win, which is data roaming charges. They can see that as a political win, and it's just much easier for them to, they don't bother about what else is in there, really.
No.
And the rest, they kind of trust that their digital person will give them the right advice.
Yeah, and it's the best and the worst of European Parliament.
Yeah.
Just summed up in one vote. And as you say, the rules themselves, just so fuzzy, and you can actually see each certain country's probably trying to, pick and choose. Oh, we'll have this bit of it and we'll apply it this way. And I think this is the stuff that part of what's rolled into this is that our blocking kind of rules that we've got in place, all the kind of Camerons, you'll block this and block that and block that. And that's now illegal as part of all this as well. So Cameron's reacted by saying, right, instead of it just being, we're asking the companies, we're going to now turn it into law. So they're going to quickly rush through some sort of law that puts all our porn blocks into place in Britain, which is all quite grim.
I guess because it's not a political win for anyone, they don't pay attention to this. They don't really understand the full implications of it and what it actually means. Because at the moment, they're trying, they're laying foundations for what the future of, the business sphere will be, because this is where business happens now, right? Anyway, you live with it. We'll be too old to actually suffer it, I should think, too much. And America went through this about 5 years ago, and I think they had exactly the same arguments, and I think kind of the same outcome. So we're not alone, unfortunately. Big money will win out, as it always does. Let's just go on the slow internet. Let's be pioneers down the slow internet highway. Sun is going to scrap its paywall.
So a couple of years after, and I mean, they were the biggest website, or the biggest news website, turned on its paywall, and 2 years down the line they've actually said, right, we're switching off again.
Yeah, they're going to go back into the advertising sphere. So the free at delivery, but with advertising on the site. They reckon that's going to get them more users. I think it's such a balancing act. I guess 2 years later, they've decided that balance is not worth it for the amount of actual subscribers they get compared to the actual advertising revenue they could potentially earn. Even that, it'll make their site look like the Daily Mail, which is horrible.
But the Daily Mail has proven that the stories they run is kind of horrid as they are, pull the traffic, pull adverts, and makes money.
Yeah. Anyway, they're back doing that again. Facebook Messenger is going to change its processes. So anyone can message you. In fact, anyone can message you now, but it goes into a different inbox, which no one ever goes and accesses and isn't on the mobile device, so you'll never even see it anyway. But now they are going to let someone who knows who you are, or knows your name at least, message you. And then your inbox will show that message. You can choose whether you do want to respond to it. The person at the other end won't be able to see whether you've at least done the initial, you know, look at the message. So there's no pressure there. And if you want to, you can just put them in spam or say you don't want to hear any messages from them again. Thank you very much.
Insta block.
Yeah, it seemed reasonable.
I actually think it makes sense.
Let's see how many spam crappy messages you get.
Yeah, I don't think I get any spam in Facebook.
Well, they're probably just in your secondary inbox that you never look at.
Yeah, probably. And I mean, I have had people get in touch and say, oh, I want to friend you. And I was like, no. We went to school together. Yep, you're a cock.
I didn't like you then. I don't like you now.
No. Nope.
Goodbye.
I wanted to keep in touch. I would have.
Get out. Yeah. So anyway, good move. That's all going to be rolling out to their Messenger apps as well. So be on desktop and Messenger.
And it also gets around people having to know your phone number to text kind of thing.
Yeah. Which you can understand.
Yeah, all good.
And sometimes for me, the quickest way to get in contact is now via Facebook Messenger, as long as they're my friend. And now they're saying, doesn't he have to be their friend? The quickest way to get in contact with them on their phone is to. I'm
quite fragmented.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like Shaq will be iMessage, you know, and there's a couple others that are all iMessage, and there's others that are WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And there's a couple on Messenger. It's just
for me, it's just the split between text and Messenger and Hangouts. Actually, Hangouts has turned in quite a big one for me.
Ah, interesting. The only person I talk to in Hangouts.
But my Hangouts on my phone is all hooked in to my text. Actual text and SMS.
Which is where I my iMessages.
So it's the equivalent. So my sister will always come in through that. So I'll always see that on my Hangouts. It's different.
Yeah. I still find Hangouts clunky.
It's a bit clunky.
Just the UI is just a bit... And I've got this random one like on the iPad on Hangouts. There's a one notification... I can't get rid of it. it just will not disappear.
There you go.
Anyway, I digress.
Google's going to put podcasting inside Play Music. What? Sounds good. Basically, it's not been there so far, but they are going to add the ability for podcasters to publish on their streaming service. And they're going to include that in their kind of curation tools, so you can search and have sort of defined playlists, things like that, and that's going to include podcasts. So when are we going to be on there, Ian?
Later this year.
Cool.
Later next year.
This isn't not fully opened up yet, but they've just announced their intent basically. And they're going to take a few initial podcasts, I think.
Yeah, and it's Spotify, it's coming as well, isn't it?
Is it? I think I mentioned that I would like that. I don't know if
I'm
that was
sure
actually happening.
Earlier this year, Spotify confirmed that podcasts were coming as well.
But I think they are only for the big major ones like your BBC podcasts. I'm not sure it's an open framework.
I think initially they were doing it with certain partners with the intent to open it up eventually, a bit like iTunes is.
That's good news for podcasting, because I think I mentioned a few times ago, it's one of the things I've lost out when I've gone to Android. Podcasting really isn't as big. And it is. I still listen to podcasts. I still have. I get the name of my podcast app that I use. Pocket Cast, it's called.
I was going to say Pocket Cast is multi-platform.
Yeah, and it's a very reasonable thing. But it's still. I don't listen to podcasts like I used to when it was fully integrated into iOS and on my Mac. So, that's one thing I've lost out, and it'd be good to see them having a resurgence in other places. Let's get them out there. Let's get them streamed, and let's get us on them. That'd be good. Talk games.
Yes.
Nintendo is launching its first game, but it's now on mobile, and it's going to be 2016 now. So initially, it was going to be 2015, but they've delayed that for better promotion, is what they're saying. Miitomo. Is going to be the
casual racist.
That's exactly right pronunciation, I'll have you know.
It was the fact that you... No, I better not.
Nintendo. Yeah, so it's going to be free to play this first one, but it's going to have paid add-ons. The later ones will be sort of paid for products and services. Still quite excited to have Nintendo on the mobile market. They should always have been there, really.
They should, but I don't get what this is.
So
they're going to use me characters to communicate with other players, and you can chat to people.
I guess it's like having, you know how people talk with sock puppets because they can't express themselves without sock puppets? Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
A bit like but, that.
I know.
Anyway, who knows what it's going to be? Nintendo, they're quite fun. So who knows?
No, I know. And I would rather see them on that platform than not, because it's not a company I'd want to see disappear.
No, and say up until now, they haven't done it because they don't want to cannibalize their hardware sales for the sake of some software. And the fact that you can sell software on their hardware for like $30 for a game that now you'd expect to play £1.50 on the App Store kind of thing. So I think that's why they've been resistant so far. But I think they've realized and seen that they really do have to get into this market to keep afloat. If it means the end of Nintendo hardware, it might do, a bit like we saw the end of Sega hardware. They've never been the same since, have they, Sega?
No. And I mean, Nintendo are talking about this. Is it Nintendo NX? So some sort of, you know, console that's going to come out. But already lots of rumours that, you know, it won't be as powerful as Xbox One and PS4, which is 2.5-3-year-old hardware.
So already they're running tech. But then they've done that before successfully. You know,
they've managed
it. But yeah. All right. No Man's Sky 2016 in June. No less. So we've been waiting for this for a while. You've particularly been waiting for this for a while. Jaded by it yet?
No. Because what got me was just the fact it came out of nowhere, and it was a combination of the Go Anywhere and the music just I don't know, just flicked a switch. Slightly disappointing that it's just taking so long to come out. And then there's all these little kind of sub rumors that all the demos so far have been in PCs. They're really struggling to get performance. You know, just over ambitious because They keep on emphasizing they were a three-man studio and they're going to build this, you know, like, you know, it's the universe is so big that you'll never meet, you know, chances are you'll never meet anybody else. I've still keep the faith. You know, it's good that somebody's got a vision, they've put it out there, companies are investing money in it.
And it still looks, it's got a style all of its own. It's got, you know, and it's kind of scope does seem awesome in the, you know, the proper sense of the word. If this was ever, you know, properly, you just work with 3D headsets and stuff, would be awesome as well.
And I think
to give that size and scale.
I think I mentioned it before. There's a game, I think I played it in the Amstrad. It came out in Amiga and Atari ST, and I think I started the Amstrad at the time, Captain Blood. So I'm going back, 30 years it must have been. And it was a, you know, go to different planets and do a bit of exploring and you're in space. And it's just, there's just always something about
that. Back to that, yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, let's just see if it's lonely and boring or actually quite exciting.
just like me.
One of the two. Drive Club is going to get motorcycles. So that was announced by Sony and Evolution Studios. It wasn't an expected announcement, but yeah, it's going to get them.
This was the Sony, there was a Sony kind of show on Wednesday, or Tuesday it was. It was the same day, I think, that it was all the Halo came out. And this did come out of nowhere. So they've plopped bikes in. I think it was £13 or £15 to buy, and I'll probably pick it up because Drive Club, after the first 3-4 months where it was horrendous and online was horrible, just the most enjoyable racing game probably since PGR2 for me. That's how I just loved it.
Only concern is that I don't think bikes have ever been dropped into a car game successfully.
No, and people are saying the handling is just like a car. So you are just, but there's other people saying no, it's a bit more subtle than that, and certainly the videos look as if there's a bit more weight to it than a car.
And all I'm saying,
no,
they've never been added to a game.
And also, I must admit, I still hark back to the first MotoGP for me was a great bike game, and then they just started faffing around.
Yeah.
And there was one, was it called Ride? I think I played the demo of, and I just thought it was horrendous. It just felt wrong. Just didn't feel enjoyable. Yeah. So. Anyway, it's nice to see that they're doing that. But also, I know I'm digressing, sorry, but there was a whole lot of VR kind of games talked about. And one of the things that was kind of behind closed doors is they've got Drive Club running at 60 frames per second, outputting to 120 frames per second onto the PlayStation VR kit. And they reckon they've got 6 months to get it ready, and they probably will have it ready. So super excited.
Yeah, driving games with VR must be. That's what I'm looking forward to, actually.
So that if they can get that right, then top notch.
Gran Turismo Sport has been announced early 2016, so this will be the next. Is it an expansion or is it actually sort of standard? It's just a standalone thing.
It's a standalone game.
And essentially, it's going to run two FIA championships inside it. It can be the Nations Cup or you can have a Manufacturers Cup, basically. So it's basically Gran Turismo, but with a bit more kind of, it looked like a kind of street-focused, a circuit-focused kind of racer. But to be honest, the video that I watched of the launch was stuttering so much I couldn't really work out what's going on. But anyway.
No, it was a game. It wasn't the video launch. And it's another Gran Turismo game. And again, it looks like they're going to come with full VR support as well.
Yes. So again, that's quite exciting.
It is. And there was a couple other VR games. There was a big robot-y arena type. Not a big robot, but you're basically in agile robot things shooting, and that looks awesome. They do look to have three or four games that are like, they look like, yeah. I'm buying it. I'm there.
You're sold.
I'm there.
Yes, an Xbox One update's finally got its launch date. So this is going to be the new Xbox Experience coming 12th of November. This is the one that gives you backward compatibility games. It gives you Windows 10 based software and hardware underlying, and vertical basically pages rather than the horizontal scrolling that we've got now. Generally speaking, I had a quick look at the kind of preview videos, and it does look like it's been a bit more organized better, but it's not until I get my hands on it to see whether it actually makes sense, which the current one doesn't.
No.
To see whether they've actually cracked it. And I really, really hate, one part of me thinks I really want them to have sorted this, and then part of me would be frustrated the fact that it's taken this long. It's taken 2 years to try and sort this out, and all of that kind of lost ground that they've got because of it. And I think most of people bailed out on Xbox because the online just became impossible.
Yeah, it's such a shame. They
had such a lead, and that's all they had to do to keep going.
Yep, the Xbox and the Xbox 360 was just such a leap ahead of everything and online. And I mean, probably 4 months since I'd switched the Xbox on when I put it on for Halo this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was struggling. I was actually how do I do a party?
It
was
like, and you heard me chatting away to my Xbox, and you're like, what are you doing? But actually, it is the easiest way to do it.
And I was like, how do I? Where's the downloads? How do I see downloads? And it's so unintuitive.
Yes, there's nowhere. You have to go to My Games and Apps, which is an app. You have to.
And if you're using it, I think if you're using it day in, day out, you do. You just get used to it, and that's.
Lose downloads when it doesn't. When I'm trying to download something and My Games and Apps isn't on my homepage, I don't know where to go.
Yeah.
And when I want to change a setting, if I want to find out how to appear offline, which I do sometimes, I couldn't tell you how to do it now. It takes me 6 or 7 attempts. Normally turn it off before I can even find out how to do it. It's just, balderdash. Anyway, so hopefully that will all be sorted.
Yes. Some of the beta testers are reporting back it works really well, but also that they've bricked their Xboxes getting it updated.
Right, okay, fantastic.
So I'm hoping that they fix that for.
And this is going to be running someone said there's three editions of Windows 10 running on the one box. It can't be good for performance.
No.
It cannot be good. I guess all their layers are just in a different, completely isolated.
But I just want to say thank you to Microsoft for my birthday gift.
Is it on your birthday, 12th. Is it?
Yes.
Yeah, there we go. Anyway, Cortana's now not going to be coming out. That's going to be waiting until 2016. So that's all the kind of integrated voice search and sort of natural search.
What do I care? Glaswegians, it doesn't work. 11. 11. Anyway, only three people will know that I mean by that.
I think that's the only thing, big thing that's being missed out. Anyway, there you go. She won't be there, but backwards compatibility will.
Won't be there.
Let's have a quick chat in the last couple of minutes around. So Halo 5's out, and we've both had online games, and I just played a tiny weeny bit of the single player. What are your thoughts on it?
Looks really pretty, sounds really pretty, and I think it's the first big multiplayer game that day one has just worked for me.
It is absolutely seamless.
Solid. You connect to games. There's no drops of there's no weird like what just happened there. It's just all really solid, fast. as well.
Yeah, absolutely silky smooth, and there's no lag discernible. It's all running on their, I guess it's their Azure platform, whatever underlies it, their cloud network. So even arena games, which are just four versus four, so only eight players, which have always been peer-to-peer to date, they're all running on these dedicated little tiny, I guess they're just little nodes somewhere, but it just makes such a big difference not having, you know, one person who's... I can't say that I've seen any lag yet in all the games, and we've been playing, you know, all sorts of people.
Yeah, there was, I think there was one, I can't remember which night it was we were playing, there was one where I thought I saw a guy kind of like jump around a little bit, but you're going to get people with, you know, horrendous pings, you know, no matter... You know, no matter what they, you know.
But at least it doesn't impact on you. Say if you're the in the peer to peer network, you always felt you suffered when you were
the whole game.
Peer.
Yeah, absolutely. You felt like, oh, this game's gone. Yeah. You know, it's like everybody's jerking around and stuff, and it's like. So, I honestly, for me, kind of close to how I felt when I started. You know, Halo 3 is probably the one I enjoyed the most, although I probably played more than Halo 2, but. Halo 3 was just like, you know, everything in Halo 2 and polished more. And Halo 4, I think, dropped the ball a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then Master Chief Collection was a mess. You know, it's just, there's no getting away from it. It's an absolute mess.
I enjoy it. It was fine as a single player.
And the reason I'm talking multiplayer is there's, you know, I might be tempted to do some co-op, you know, so let me know when you're doing your single player, because I might join you and do co-op, because that's the only thing, I think it's the only chance I've got of probably getting through single player.
Do some of it,
But people are saying that it's actually really, really good. You know, it's like the story's okay, but it's quite cinematic and enjoyable.
It feels like Halo, like it has for years, but a modern more. Halo. So there's it's still not single shot kills, although you can do headshots and they do count quite a lot in this game, as in you have to be quite accurate to be good. But it's still generally underlying. It's got the genealogy of Halo plus some extras just to make it fun. I don't know how these new card systems are going to work out in the long run, but I don't think it affects Arena, where I prefer playing anyway.
Exactly. And the thing that showed last night was, if I think back to that one game, we were getting pwned, and it was just like we just teamed up a bit more, held an area, got back in it, won the game. It was like teamwork wins. You know, it's just back to that really nice feeling of just rather than just slogging it through and just getting beat, it was like, hold on, let's do
pause,
something.
Pause, cycle, yeah, it's all good.
And it was, so I'm really pleased with it. You know, it's, as I said, I was full of, except I love Halo, but I was full of like, this is going to be rubbish. You know, the same. You know, the first week will be painful. We'll have loads of issues, and it's just not. It just works.
Yeah, considering the amount of data, it's unbelievable they can do it. Bonkers. And we've got a really strange entry here. It says Apple TV thoughts. Now, I haven't got an Apple TV, Ian.
Okay. remember right at the start when I said I reckon you could host your own podcast? This is Ian's Apple TV thoughts. So it came through today, so it's just a couple of brief things. Okay. So I bought an Apple TV, and I also bought a game controller for it. I just thought I want to see how games do play on it, not just via the kind of touch controller. I want to actually get a proper gamepad. So a couple of quick takeaways. Front end GUI, really nice. Looks really nice. Screensaver on it's really nice. The apps, when you install them, install really quickly. You set up really quickly. And even the setup of the box, you just pair it with your phone, grabs all your details off there. Yeah, you do a one kind of one-time code, and it gets all your details, and you're away really quickly. The remote, really nice. So using the touch to navigate around, you know, you can do quite slowly or you can go quicker. Mm-hmm. So very easy. I still think, still not convinced in that whole 10-foot interface where it's just loads of icons, because the more you install over time, there's going to be hundreds potentially. You know, if I look at how, and fair enough,
you are quite extreme.
So I do put a lot of apps on, so it could get, you know, really busy. But the App Store is a mess.
Right.
Okay. It is a disgrace. There's no other way of getting around it. There's no categories. So you've basically got the Apple, so you've got the titles in the front page that Apple have picked to say, here's these great apps and great games. But there's nothing else. You can't go in and say, show me TV streaming apps. You can't do that. Show me games.
You were going to be able to talk to this thing and it was going to do that.
You can, but the talking doesn't search the App Store.
Right, okay.
So you need to go in and use this keyboard interface, which is horrendous, to go and search. So already iMore have got a video up that says, here's all the apps available, because you can't tell otherwise. And all they've done is they've searched for A, and then they've scrolled down the list of all the games.
No way.
And then they've searched for B and scrolled down the list of
all
the
games.
Okay,
well, that sounds like something Apple will solve.
They have to do something, because it is truly awful. And the thing is, you can't buy the apps from your Mac or your iOS device. You've got to be on that platform to buy them. So
what
Discover.
What I was going to ask was, are the apps cross-platform? So if you bought an app that was available on Apple TV on your phone?
It depends on a developer.
Right, okay.
So for example, what did I put on? So Geometry Wars,
mm-hmm.
I'd already bought, and it was £8, and I just downloaded it and it was there.
Right, okay, yeah.
So I tried it with a little touch control. It was okay. Tried it with a gamepad, and it just felt like playing it on PS4 or Xbox.
Yeah,
really nice. And the iCloud syncing was all there, so it got my save position, and it was like that's lovely, you know. So that is truly instead of just playing an iPad version at home, I could be playing a nice big screen, you know, gamepad version, and then on the go, I could be doing it with the iPad. So there's definitely chinks of that's really nice. The Siri searching, it does work. So you hold down the button and, you know, play Dark Knight, and it gives you the options of where from and, mm-hmm. and away you go. So that worked. But bizarrely, it doesn't search your music collection. It doesn't support searching Apple Music, and that's coming early next year. It's a bit like the store. It feels like to get this out, a bit like the watch earlier this year, they've went with it knowing that seeing 2 or 3 months, we'll get a better version of the software out.
Wonder if that's the pressure of the shareholders.
It does feel very different. No, not like the phone. You know, the phone feels like they know that yearly drumbeat.
Yep.
But with these kind of new platforms, and Apple TV is not a new platform, but it just feels like this is a. It doesn't feel ready. It felt like it needed, and a lot of people said that about when watchOS 2 came out. This is what should have came out in April. You know, apps running natively. So RunKeeper on the watch now.
But you look at the phone, and the phone came out, and it, you know, everyone said what it could have been, and iPhone 2 was what it should have been the first time out. So I think they always have this one iteration where they tend to. I mean, I know the Apple TV is a bit different in that they have already had products, but this is a different product. It's not really an evolution as much as a different thing.
Agreed. But it's just. And it's daft things like, so because Apple have promoted it, you can see it's a Flickr app. And it's like, that's nice. Get a Flickr app, easily sign in, can browse all my albums and see other photos. And it is nice to see that in the big screen. YouTube. You wouldn't know there's a YouTube app, but it's there. And it's just because they've buried it, basically. There's no categories. You can't see it anywhere. It's not promoted. Unless you
search, right?
So already you're seeing websites today saying, here's the 10 apps you really want to go and install.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just... And it does feel like the App Store. Remember when the iPhone came out, it was all those websites that showed you here's the top games and stuff like that, because discoverability was really poor, and it still is really poor, but I think they've kind of died away quite a bit. I can see a real growth over the next few months of you know, tvOS websites saying here's this great app that nobody knows about, because you can't see it and Apple haven't promoted it this week.
There you go. Okay. Well,
so it shows promise.
Things are progressing. I'm sure.
So just to keep you happy, iPlayer is coming. Seemingly, BBC 6-8 weeks ago said we're not going to put an app out for it, which is quite a surprise, seeing as they're everywhere. I mean, Xbox, the issue was always that
paywall.
The subscription service. But they confirmed yesterday, you know, big article on BBC saying, yep, we're coming, which is good. No Amazon. So, you know, so if you're a Prime user, the only way is to do AirPlay. And AirPlay did work, but it's just all awkward. It feels awkward to do, rather than just firing up an app and saying, you know, the same way that you fire up your iPlayer app or your Android app or your, you know, you've got it on the web. So it shows promise. I just
probably take a few iterations of the software, not necessarily the hardware. I don't think, you know, they're not obviously lagging on the hardware. They're just lagging a bit on the software.
It was just amazing that you know, that you can, you know, on Siri on the iPhone, you know, play me the top 25 songs from last year. Just does it.
Yeah.
Do that and it's just like, oh, I don't know what you mean.
Okay.
But they've put in things like, you know, what's the weather tomorrow, and it pops up weather. It's like...
Bet it's got gate changes. <Your airplane. laughs> You should try it. All right, we're going to wrap it up there. If you want to find out more about us, what we do, who we are, digitaloutbox.com. You can talk to us, info@digitaloutbox.com, and we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. In fact, we're not on Skype anymore, are we? I think we gave up on that. Anyway, you can tweet me if you want, Cheesy UK, and you can follow along all my racing that happened this year, academyracer.co.uk, and I'm sure soon we'll be building up to next year. Ian, what about you?
Blog is Ian.net and Twitter is Shripa.
Lovely. Let's go play Halo. Goodbye.
Get out. Every time I say get out, I miss Brian.
I know.
There's no getting away from it.
Brian. Come on.
There's absolutely no getting away from it. I miss Brian and I miss
splash around.
I miss Doubted Brew Boy. Just for hearing him say, get up, you Hispanic.
Just for a bit of casual racism.
Yep. Oh, you can always rely on Roy for that. And in that bombshell. He was also, I still remember the little kid who he'd befriended. Where are you from? He'd get done for grooming now. Where are you from? And he was telling him. And then after like 10 minutes of Roy with a shotgun, he was like, hey, shotgun guy. He goes, what is it? Like, are you going to kill somebody? Totally pawned by a 6-year-old kid. Ah.